seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
You're welcome along to the Ryan Line. It is Nathan and Shane with you as always. We're on a Wednesday this week. We've gone a little bit early because, well, Shane Ryan looks like he's on his holidays yet again.
You know me, Mr. Vacation. I'm here. I'm in Naples, Florida, and there are guys mowing the green right next to me. I don't know if you can hear the racket, but yeah, I'm here with my mom and my stepdad. My children are here, but I'm not on vacation. I'm still working because it's the week before the Masters. So I'm working harder than ever in a way, which if you've ever been on a place where everyone else is on vacation and you're working, it's about the worst combo because they're sort of annoyed at you. You feel guilty the entire time. Yeah, it's bad stuff.
Bubba from Naples, Florida?
Say it again.
Is Bubba from Naples in Florida?
Bubba is from Baghdad in Florida.
Baghdad. I knew it was one of the places that was named like somewhere else. Who's from Naples in Florida?
I like to, the very, very different places, Naples and Baghdad, in the world. I don't know who's from Naples, if anybody. There's a lot of golf here, like there is all over Florida. Hey, the mowers have left. We're great.
What golf course are you staying on?
It is called Heritage Bay. In Naples. It is your classic golf and tennis community. My parents retired down here. I think they have 3 9 holes. And so if you go play the course, it depends on the day they put you out on one or the other.
So I have done what we always do in this and quickly Wikipedia'd Naples, Florida. Notable people from Naples, Florida. Larry Bird.
Oh, wait, Larry Bird's from Indiana.
Larry
Bird's not from Naples.
Larry Bird is from Naples, Florida. Like, it's true. When you do click on it, it then says he's from West Baden Springs in Indiana.
Yeah.
Maybe he moved to Naples, Florida in his retirement. Is that the sort of place somebody with a lot of money would end up retiring to?
Very much that kind of place,
okay.
Yeah.
So some of these may just be currently living there.
Yeah. There's no reason for you to know this, but like him being from Indiana is one of the formative things of Larry Bird.
Okay.
Yeah, they called him the Hick French Lick.
Hayden Buckley, who also I now see is from Tennessee, but is living in Naples, Florida. Shahid Khan, of course, owner of Fulham and the Jacksonville Jaguars, I suspect also probably just went there. So all of these people are just blow-ins, essentially. I don't know if there's any.
Yeah.
It sort of goes back to that bit again of the Jupiter having the greatest youth reach golf program of all time for the amount of great golfers that come out of Jupiter, Florida. they must be doing something really special there.
Larry Bird, I'm looking at him now. He has a $1 million mansion down here. So, yeah. No, it is. Yeah, everybody comes here. I don't know why, Nathan, but they do.
Because it's hot?
It's hot. It's nice. No, it is nice. It's nice. But it's like swampy. You know, you come down here. Have you been? You've been to Florida, right?
I've been to Florida.
Yeah, Southern Florida is just a different world. It's a different planet. There's gators. It's unsettling in some way. You're in a swamp. You're not on solid land at any point.
All right, you really don't seem like you're enjoying this holiday at all.
No, I'm having fun. We're going to see. We're going to a fan boat ride. Have you ever seen those in movies?
Oh yes,
like we're going to the Everglades swamps today to be on like a fan boat.
Ah, very cool.
I
want
to wear a cutoff and.
Wow. Now that's exciting. Come on. Cheer up, Shane.
That is exciting, yeah.
Cheer up.
I'm happy. I've had a great time.
Are you going to Augusta?
And a split frozen cocktail.
Okay. Oh, you're having some frozen cocktails. Okay, this is...
No,
this is
I will not be going to Augusta. Okay. You know my deal,
take
mate.
Him on for the team.
Yeah, exactly. You cut out just for a second, but I'm not going to Augusta. My deal every year is I trade that one so I can go to all the other ones.
Okay. We got a lot of questions in on the big golfing story of the week, which, shock horror, is not Gary Woodland battling back from brain surgery and what sounds like the most horrific after effects you could possibly have from a brain surgery, which I was explaining it to my children watching it on Sunday night, what had happened, and then we were watching the interview, which, as one of them quickly pointed out, that was only 4 weeks ago. Like, What? And yeah. Then he was talking afterwards that at one stage one of the spectators got too close to him, and again, and he has, because whatever part of his brain was affected, so it's anxiety and fear and people getting too close to him or sudden shocks right. still impact him. It's insane how he can still turn up then on a Sunday, what's meant to be the most anxious thing possible, and look at, like, remarkable, where we've had four Sundays in a row of complete collapses on a Sunday, that the one guy yeah. who literally is living in a permanent state of fear is the one guy who can comfortably survive it.
It is interesting to think about, does like the constant worry about other stuff attenuate you or just make it so that normal golf anxiety doesn't like really hit you? Like if you're worried about someone from the gallery attacking you, maybe the idea of hitting a shot from 150 yards under pressure is just no problem at all.
Yeah. That's perspective, I guess.
I guess. I don't know if it's a perspective anyone would want, but it was something else.
It sounds absolutely horrific. Not many Gary Woodland questions, lots of Tiger Woods questions.
Here we go.
So the beard asks, and I can answer this because one of the reasons Shane isn't going to Augusta is because he has no balls as a journalist and wouldn't ask any of the players anything about Tiger Woods. He'd be asking Rory, "Oh, if you could play a certain part of somebody else's game, what would it be, Rory? What would it be?" The big questions.
Nathan, I have the combo of asking innocuous, boring questions and still making the players mad
yes,
at me.
Yes. So the beard asks.
That's my superpower as a journalist.
If Tiger does turn up, which he's not, but when he does reemerge, if Tiger does turn up, will you ask him about the risk he's placing the public under with his reckless driving? If not, then will anyone hold him to task? He can't be allowed to just say sorry and get away with this. Time for the golf world to move on. He's a liability now.
Yeah, you know, I had this conversation last week with another journalist, Kevin Van Valkenburg, and we were asking the question of, has there been... have we failed? Has golf media failed in its responsibility? Like, nobody's written the big Tiger feature about, you know, whatever he might be addicted to or anything like that. Has there been a failure to hold him to account? And, you know, does it bear some responsibility for what's happening? I think maybe that's a little far, but, you know, it's even this, I look at it. I wrote this in my column this week. I don't know what else to say about Tiger Woods right now, except for three things. Number one, it's very sad what's happening. His trajectory seems very bad. Number two, you know, he clearly has problems. Number three, he's a danger to himself and others, which is clearly obvious. But then after you say that, you're like, what else can you really do? I mean, what else can you really do or say? And I think we've had some people who have looked a little foolish in their responses to this Tiger stuff because everybody's at a loss. We are so used to framing things through this narrative of, either, you know, he's on top of the world or it's a comeback narrative or there's redemption. And of course, Tiger winning in 2019 fed into that completely. But to the beer's point, it's like if Tiger comes back and like he's going to rehab now, it seems like from his statement. If Tiger comes back and I stand up in front of him and say, "What do you have to say about putting people's lives in danger?" It's like, what does that accomplish, really? Do you know what I mean? Like,
That would be a very fair question at this stage to ask.
It would be a fair question, but isn't it already? I guess it's like, it seems obvious to me. And who is it for? That feels like it would be more for me than for any kind of. It's like, what are you going to get from Tiger on that? Do you know what I mean? And you're right. But it's just like, by the time he comes back, he'll have been in rehab, he'll have done all this stuff. At a certain point, an individual just has to live their own lives and try to improve their own things. And everything else is like a legal question. So I think what you could say is like, maybe we have to question how we look at him as like a role model or, you know, what happened in 2019 where we seemingly forgot everything he had done before. And here he goes and does it again. The overall we're ignoring the overall pattern and the downward trajectory seemingly of what's happening in his life. So I think there's all merit to that. I just don't think like that confrontational moment. I don't know quite who that would be for or what it would achieve.
The conversation you were having with Kevin Van Valkenburg around, you know, journalism's role in this.
Yeah.
There could only really be a question of it. And I understand the Beard's question there of if there was a press conference, is somebody going to broach this? It would be if there's been some sort of a cover-up going on over the last 7 or 8 years that people knew that there were consistent issues with Tiger, that when we see him on TV and the eyes might be bloated, that people are watching what happens next. There's a there's sources within his camp telling you that things aren't right, but people are feeling we can't write about this because Tiger Woods is too big to fail, essentially, within golf, and we need this sort of constant appetizer of maybe Tiger might return. Maybe we'll have a 2019 all over again. And every year starts with, will we see Tiger play the Masters? Will we see him win a tournament? Will he play in the Seniors Tour? That the lure of Tiger returning is too big for the golf media to just switch off. But as much as you can say, has there ever been any sense of a cover-up regarding that everyone was very much in the know that Tiger's having a lot of problems and nobody's just saying it out loud?
No, it's never that explicit, right? It's like, there may have been people who knew certain things, but what it's really about is more of a subtle chilling effect where it's like, all right, if you're a golf media outlet and you want to write the negative Tiger story, the really in-depth investigation of Tiger that's going to unearth all this stuff, it's like, what are the consequences going to be? Well, he's represented by a very powerful person in Mark Steinberg. And so you have to think like they're going to come at you with everything they have. Even if you publish it and even if you don't get sued or whatever, there are going to be next level thing. You may lose access. You may lose whatever. You also have the fact that golf fans in America, at least, there's a big faction of them that are like, don't say anything negative about my God, my heroes, you know, and like they're going to come at you. Even with this, even honestly, go read the Facebook columns of Golf Digest or anywhere doing the most like plain news item on Tiger. It's like a bunch of old people screaming at you to mind your own business, right? It's like, this is like that is a huge part of the reaction. So there's that to worry about. There's all this just low key kind of stuff that is maybe keeping you from doing it, which is why I was like, it would have to be the New Yorker, it would have to be New York Times Magazine, some big non-golf thing coming in from outside to do this. But no, it's not like there's a cover-up. You know what I mean? It's never that explicit. It's just that there's this low-lying kind of incentive issue of why would we do this? The cover-up may have been what happened in 2021, and that may have been the LAPD doing it, right? We don't, because we never... You kind of knew maybe, or you thought you knew what happened, but nobody ever got it. What was crazy to me, I don't know if you thought this, the LAPD seemed to like do everything they could to protect him. The Jupiter police, where it's like a golf town, right? Where this, you would think the Jupiter police would be the ones where it's like, you never even hear about this. No, the Jupiter police were the ones who were more kind of investigative and said more, talked about the pills they found in his pocket. I thought that was a unique part of the story too.
Hey, Shane and Nathan, why is there so much sympathy for Tiger? It's a miracle he hasn't killed someone.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there this sympathy for Tiger?
Well, because everybody loves a winner and everybody loves, this guy's a legend of the sport and everybody loves that. And it makes a difference that he didn't kill anybody, right? It's so funny to think, even judicially, it's like he's not going to, but he could face 9 months in jail. That's the ultimate penalty. Realistically, if there's a really, you know, adamant judge or jury, he could go to jail for 30 days. If he had hit somebody and killed somebody, I mean, he's going to jail for a long time. So there is like a difference between he could have killed someone, which is an absolutely valid point and completely true, versus he did kill someone or he did hurt somebody. Then if he had killed himself, that would be a tragedy, right? We'd talk about it as a tragedy, but it would have a completely different tenor because it would now be in the past tense. So there's this thing of like, he's done these things that could have serious consequences. And so far have only had consequences to him. And not even really as bad as you could expect from those two crashes that he had. So it's just the way of the life, I guess. It's the way we perceive things. And it's the fact that he's Tiger Woods. He's Tiger Woods, and people, you know, have these memories and nostalgia for him.
Yeah, and there's probably two different things going on. One is that like sports fans are great sympathizers. Like people have done far, far worse than Tiger Woods, and it hasn't necessarily affected their legacy with the vast majority of sports fans. And also, I think probably two things can be true at once, in that people are shocked, horrified, angry that Tiger is putting other people in danger, but at the same time have seen the heights that this guy has got to, who's clearly in a serious spot of bother, 50 years of age, looks like his body is completely broken up, is trying to find a way through that, is making some very bad choices, and that people feel he's given them so much that maybe they need to give him a little bit more leeway because of that, and that now he's getting help. Yeah. Well, that's the main thing.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right there. It's it is sad what's going on to him, and you can feel sympathy for him while also acknowledging that he's putting people in danger with the way he's behaving. But his whole life is easily read as some kind of, like, you know, American tragedy about fame and exposure and all that kind of stuff. What a weird life he's lived. I think as a human being, he does merit.
But the thing with that, with this, is that he had all that. And again, you know, you read any of the books about Tiger's upbringing and, you know, obviously his behavior that led to events sort of 16, 17 years ago. You know, if you said at 50, if it was a rock star or a movie star, you would think it would be a drink, drugs related issue. Whereas, like, Tiger's problem, it does seem, is that he's just destroyed his body and he's in a constant pain. And he's somehow trying to find a way to manage that.
It is. And it's funny, you know, Patrick Radden Keefe, who wrote the great book Say Nothing about the Northern Irish conflict, he also wrote the book about the Sackler family and opioids and prescription drugs and everything like that. And so there's also this other thing where he's going through a very American epidemic problem, right? Or maybe you say a global at this point, but it's like, yeah, he wrecked his body. He was prescribed these drugs. Now, I'm not saying I know this, but seems very much like he has maybe an addiction problem to them. And, you know, these are things that are, there's a blend of what's his fault and what's not his fault throughout his life in every aspect. So there's that too.
Robbie asks, do you ever see Tiger doing a sit-down interview where he admits to what's been really going on over the last few years? His body is clearly wrecked, but he still can't admit it.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think his entire public life has been being restricted, right? Not being honest with the media. Even his sex scandal, it was like you got the bare minimum, and it's like, now we're going to conduct this all in private. I never see him doing a tell-all where, like, him breaking down crying, going, you know, this is the pressures I was under, and this is what I did, and then I got addicted to this and that or whatever. You're just not going to see that from him. It's all going to happen privately. I expect Tiger Woods to disappear from public life at a certain point when he's no longer entertaining the idea of coming back and playing golf, which maybe that's soon. I just don't see the guy sticking around for our public interest. You know, that's
you don't think that he's too big to fail, in that golf will keep wheeling him out for as long as it possibly can.
Right, he's useful to the PGA Tour, and he has been right for the last couple of years. I don't know. It's a great question. It's about what he wants to do. You know what I mean? I think they would want to, right? They want him to be Ryder Cup captain. They want him to do all this stuff, which, by the way, that's a, you know, third order consequence of this, is what's going to happen with the Ryder Cup now.
But a bit like an aging boxer who's just rolled out, and you're watching going, like, this is not healthy, but there's a financial incentive and they don't really know anything else.
I guess that's potentially right. I can just see him being like, screw it, I'm not going to do it. I'm done. Because I think he likes being private. I don't think he has that specific kind of ego where he's like, I want to be, or otherwise you'd be seeing him on TV, right? You'd be seeing him everywhere. And there are players like that. It's nothing wrong with it. It's a natural human thing to be like Nick Faldo, right? I want to be in golf. I want to continue being in the public eye, et cetera. I just don't think Tiger has that in him.
Eamon B is back. You might remember Eamon B from last week trying to change the Ryder Cup for the better, I think is how Eamon described it. And you didn't quite agree. You weren't sitting on the fence about it. Eamon is still with us, thankfully.
We had a gentleman's disagreement, but I love that he's back. I mean, I just read the first line of his question. I'm laughing out loud.
He said, as I search for redemption after that rinsing last week, will or should Tiger's latest traffic DUI rule him out of consideration for Ryder Cup captaincy?
Well, here we go. It probably should. It probably should.
I guess you're looking at it there, Eamon, like it's a negative. The Tiger's like, oh no, now I can't do the Ryder Cup captaincy. What a disaster.
Yeah, right. Eamon, good question, Eamon. Let me tell you, good question. Great job. I appreciate you. You nailed it. I don't know. I think that you could see a world where, I don't know, but they've got to make a decision quick, haven't they? I mean, actually, if it's not decided by a couple months, that's late in the historical, like, when he's choosing a captain. So maybe it should. Maybe it should. The problem is, if you need a captain this year, which you do, you're not going to, if Tiger, you're not going to have resolution on Tiger. Like, who knows how long he's going to be gone doing what he needs to do, rehab or whatever. So, probably should rule him out, I think. I think probably you've got to go in a different direction here. I think Eamon nailed it.
Gentleman Jack asks, it seems to me that drink driving DUIs are more socially acceptable in the US than in the UK or Ireland. Being caught drink driving over here would be incredibly shameful, embarrassing, have serious repercussions. However, it seems that I'm constantly watching US-based TV shows or films where people are always driving to and from bars, never mentioned they're clearly driving under the influence. I'm sure there's not a blanket answer, but keen to hear your thoughts on it. I know it's clearly illegal in the US, but I'm asking more from a cultural perspective of what's acceptable and what's not.
It's the kind of thing where we all have friends who have had a DUI. I've never had one, but I know plenty of people who do, and it's not life ending. Maybe it's just the fact that we are a bigger country and you have to drive more. And so it's one of those things that just seems to happen. No, I mean, it is. It's like, I think it's true. It's like when you're going out, you know, there's very little public transportation, unless you're in a big city. People drive their cars everywhere. Everything's a little bit farther away. I really do think that's probably it. You could argue that maybe our drinking age, it serves us, you know, a negative purpose there, where people, this may be a stretch, but, you know, people aren't quite ready to drink, or they're doing it illegally at a much younger age, or whatever the case may be, that it actually increases. I've read stats that a later drinking age actually makes things worse, actually increases, you know, horrible drinking experiences, DUIs, all that kind of stuff. But I do think it's just the geographic thing. I really do think that's the main difference.
If you don't
buy it.
If you had a DUI tonight, what would be the impact on your life?
It's a good question. I don't know. I don't think I would get fired. It would be a problem in terms of just, you know, I'd lose my license and you'd have to, I think it costs like $10,000 by the time it's all over.
Wow.
It's an expensive thing. You lose your license for a certain amount of time. There is still a certain amount of embarrassment to it. It's not like, it's not nothing, you know? There would be a difference between me at 43 getting a DUI and me at 23 getting a DUI. At 23, you're like, this is a young person making a mistake. At 43, you're like, is something wrong? You know, like, what's happening? But I don't know. I don't think I would be fired, but you certainly could be fired. You certainly could be, depending on your job. So it's hard to say. Hopefully, okay. I don't have to find out.
Hopefully. You fly back from Naples, Florida. You and Larry
no,
Bird.
We drove.
Would give you a lift on his private jet.
Yeah, we drove, but believe it or not, with two kids in the car driving 13 hours, I'm not drinking. Well,
and if it was a time, you might need one.
Yeah, I know. It's a good point.
Presume we'll get some tears from Shane on today's pod about Tiger. Seriously, though, maybe Dan Rappaport was right to be crying. None of ye would have a career if it wasn't for Tiger. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Probably
that's
true.
Go straight to the point there. The tears
there was, you know,
people did really lose their minds a little bit last week.
There was a golf media before Tiger, just for the record. It didn't start. It wasn't like journalists just started paying attention when Tiger came around. But no, the point is correct that, you know, he changed things on a bigger scale. So I take the joke. That's funny. Ha ha. Yeah, the reactions were interesting. I mean, Dan's a friend of mine. I thought he took it on the chin. He did an interview with Barstool afterward, and it was very funny, an interview. He kind of explained what was going on. Yeah, it was just an interesting time in those couple days.
What story in golf would bring you to tears?
Shane Ryan loses job due to DUI. what golf story would bring me to tears? I have cried at things. I remember, I think maybe the last time I cried was watching Camilo Viegas' story on Full Swing. I don't know if you saw that one. Mm. That was like, oh my goodness. I mean, but those are human interest stories, right? Those are like human things more than golf things. I probably got slightly teary-eyed when Tiger won in 2019. Maybe last year watching Rory, there was a moment where I had at least goosebumps or something before everything that happened after. Just little dramatic, like competitive things like that that seem to have a broader human interest story. But yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. It just kind of comes up when it comes up, I guess. What about you?
Ooh. You see, I go along with the Camilo Viegas. I wouldn't be a everyday crier, no. Not around sporting events. I cried when Mayo lost one of their All-Irelands, one of our 13 All-Irelands. I had got my hopes up too high And I just couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't take
it
anymore.
How old were you? How old were you when that happened?
Oh, no, sorry. This is like 10 years ago.
Okay. So you were an adult.
So
yeah.
Yes. I think the key, see, it's slightly different around a full swing because I'd say it was probably similar around Camille Villegas because obviously it has all the dramatic music and everything. So it's building you to the moment. It's tempting you into it rather than just, I was definitely a bit emotional when Rory won last year.
That's what I mean. I was wondering if you like if there's any point where you got teary-eyed when he won.
Yeah, I definitely. Now, some of the tears were during the round. I can't believe this is actually happening. I think when I'm a bit soft then for the old family bit afterwards.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, Dash Day lifting Jason up when Jason wins the Masters in a few weeks. That sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Really does it for me.
Yeah, that stuff gets it. It's interesting. A good question is, when's the last time you cried at like a negative result? Like when something bad happened? I don't think I've done that in years. And if it was going to happen, it would have happened 2 days ago when Duke lost to UConn.
Oh, I don't know. There was a comment on this. Did you lose in the last minute?
Unbelievably bad. We've had two losses in a row that are like, imagine you're up 3-0 going into extra time, your favorite soccer team, and lose. It's been 2 years of that.
Have you
the kind of loss?
Did you not follow what happened Ireland last Thursday?
I thought about it yesterday, Nathan, because I saw some World Cup qualifying highlights played, but I don't know the result.
Yeah,
I didn't see it.
So we were 2-0 up after half an hour, and then we got pegged back 3 minutes from time. They equalized to send it to extra time. Then it went to penalties. And then we were ahead in the penalty shootout, and then we missed two penalties and we lost.
Jesus. Ugh. Yeah. Sports is bad. I don't know why we follow it. We follow it for our careers. We should just follow it clinically from now on. There's no more emotional investment.
Not Per Profit asks a proper question. You've just won the Masters by one shot. You're packing up late on Sunday night after all the interviews, and you realize there's 15 clubs in your bag. What would you do?
I can believe this or not, but I have such a problem with things nagging at me and being illegitimate. I would just immediately confess. There's no way I could live with that. You know what I mean? It would be like, you know, the telltale heart, that Edgar Allan Poe story where you can just hear the man's heart beating that he killed under the floorboards until he goes crazy and confesses. That would be me if I tried to put it off. The minute I saw the 15th club, I would go right to Fred Ridley and go, I'm going to go public with this. Like, you need to dock me. Like, I screwed up. I would have to.
And what a hero. What a hero you would be.
Yeah. I mean, then maybe next year I'd win the green jacket legitimately and everybody would be happy.
Or you'd be like, was it Brian Davis, the English golfer, who, this must be 10 years ago at this stage, called a penalty on himself and would have won the tournament otherwise. Didn't win the tournament, and everyone went, oh, well, he'll be repaid. He'll win many tournaments. He never won a tournament. Yeah. You see, not for profit. It's a great question, but I think
it is.
For the Masters, you would have to admit it because not only your inner monologue nagging at you forever, there's also the bit of every single thing that happens as the Masters is live on TV and photographed to infinity. So at some stage, some internet nerd will go, I was just looking here, and it does look like he is 15 clubs, and like it'll be 3 years later. They'll get you eventually. Like, it's more of a captain's prize type scenario where you're going, nobody's ever going to know this unless I admit.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing your morals, Nathan. Your question immediately, your brain just went to, will I get caught? And because I might, I have to admit it, where I said I'd do it out of the rightness of my soul. So really a kind of a bad look, Nathan, for you.
But I did notice you went straight to Fred Ridley and were more than happy for it to be made public that you had made this grand sacrifice.
I've got to lose the green jacket? Absolutely. I'm going to take everything that comes from it. Yes.
What? I was thinking of great acts of good sportsmanship. And it's ever actually worthwhile. You know, if karma ever works in that positive way for you.
Right. Well, yeah, it's funny because there's a guy named Blaine. Oh my God, this is proving your point because I can't remember his name. Blaine something, but in the Q school, he legitimately called a penalty on himself that his caddy was like, I don't think you did it, grounding a club in a bunker barely. And he called a penalty on himself, didn't make the tour because of it and would have otherwise. And you haven't heard from him again.
Don't even remember his name.
I know, Blaine. Blaine Bledges. I can't think of it. I have no idea.
Thankfully, guys, yet again on this podcast, we have Google to help us. Iconic moments in sportsmanship. Abby D'Agostino and Nikki Hamblin at the Olympics in 2016. During the women's 5,000 meters, D'Agostino fell and helped fellow competitor Nikki Hamblin, who had also tripped. Their mutual support exemplified the Olympic spirit, and they both finished the race together. Better one, maybe. Ivan Fernandez Anaya, cross-country runner, 2012.
I know.
So she saw Kenyan athlete Abel Mutai mistakenly stop short of the finish line, thinking he had won. Instead of taking advantage, Anaya encouraged Mutai to finish first, ensuring the rightful winner was recognized.
There's also the one I thought you were going to say was there was one where maybe been two brothers, but one collapsed near the finish line.
Yes, the triathletes, Alistair Brownlee and his brother, presumably also Brownlee.
But I think also, in that case, somebody else did go on to win. Isn't that right? That which is fair, I think. It's because like collapsing is unlike finishing, unlike not knowing where the finish line is. Collapsing is like you failed in your athletic achievement or whatever. But the one person who won was like not the world's most popular person at that moment.
Yeah. Listen, you know, we'd acknowledge your sacrifice, Shane, briefly, and go. Then we'd probably quickly get into that caddy. That caddy, how's he going to live with it? Because that's the other bit we didn't think of there. Your caddy now has suffered a public humiliation. You know, he's going to be on all these Google lists for people who screwed up with their jobs. And Shane could have just kept quiet and protected this guy's livelihood. But no, Shane was selfish and wanted all the glory of being the good guy while throwing his caddy under the bus.
Your brain right now is working to you being there. How do I justify taking the green jacket? Oh, I'm protecting my caddy. I didn't want him to go. I was looking out for him. Classic.
Fantastic result for Alex Fitzpatrick. But do you think when he next goes home for dinner, his parents and Matt will remind him he's not even the best golfer in the family?
I hope not. It's not the first thing they say to him when he comes in.
You got to assume. Like, part of the reason they're so good is that they had a, you know, the usual sibling rivalry that sort of drove each other on. And one of them was always, presumably Alex, a little bit bitter that Matt was better. And that has obviously driven Alex on. But somewhere inside, there's the little bit of bitterness always remains.
Yeah, but you know what? They must have pretty good parents because they Matt congratulated him. They seem to have a cool relationship. I mean, you want to hear the really sad part of this? Is that in my land conquest game that I told you about, I picked Alex Fitzpatrick to try to conquer England. Somebody else picked him too, which negates the whole pick. I should own England right now, and instead I've got nothing. I'm stuck with Sweden and Finland still.
But the tournament wasn't in England. I thought it was where the tournament was on.
No, it's the golfer. It's the golfer's.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's not as interesting.
If you did it with just where the tournament was, that would be impossible. Everybody would pick the same thing. That's silly, Nathan. It's silly.
No, because you'd have to pick, you know, you'd have to look outside the PGA Tour, for starters.
Yeah,
you know, the European Tour goes all over the world.
But you'd have everybody picking the same seven tournaments every week.
Yeah, but surely to conquer USA, you just pick Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, but the thing is, you have to worry about everybody else doing the same thing, and the USA is hard to defend because you have to defend them every week from conquest. Come on, Nathan.
Now you've got to a level of nerdiness that I fear.
It's like you've never played Flagstick of the Barbarian before.
Okay. All right. We've one last question. Okay. I haven't played that before. Is Shane Lowry still suffering a hangover from the Cognizant Classic, or will Augusta inspire him? He's definitely suffering a bit of a hangover.
I think so. I think that was a major disappointment for him. We'll see. I mean, he could go for the Lowry slam of saying, bleep this place. You know, he didn't do it at Augusta last year, but he did it at all the others. So this is the Tiger slam potential if he curses out Augusta National. I wouldn't put it past him. I think he's got it in him.
No, he's to win or to curse the place. Both.
To curse the place. Yeah. I don't think he's going to win.
You don't think he's going to win? He's got a decent record around Augusta. I think he could contend.
He could. Look, if you can't do it at the Cognizant, can you do it with the pressure on you at Augusta? Who knows? We'll see.
All right. We went off in one towards the end there. I think showed a lot of our characters negatively towards me initially, but I think Shane really lost the room with his I'm having to defend America, which is quite difficult when you've gone with Scottie Scheffler early.
Yeah.
You don't know what an Akshay Bhatia might do to you.
Tell yourself what you need to, Nathan. I think the people are going to see who the real gentleman is here.
All right. We might try and go early next week. So the main pod next week is going to be on Wednesday for your ultimate Masters preview. There will be the usual watch along as well on the Sunday. And that'll be put into the Discord and give you an update as to what time, probably depending on what happens over the course of the week. And we might try and go early next week, Shane, unless you're still on holidays.
No, I'll be back, and I would love to go early because I have a friend coming to visit for the Masters. So, yeah, early would be great.
Friend coming to visit for the Masters? Does this friend also play your super nerdy game?
No. This is a cooler friend than me.
Wow. We'll ask a question about that for next week. We'll get right into it. Get your Masters questions in for next Monday or Tuesday with Shane Ryan. Shane, pleasure as always.
See you later.
Starter kid right here.